Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Monique Coven. I'm the host. I'm a certified trauma recovery coach. I've worked for over 25 years as a social worker, and I'm a survivor. The Trauma Healing Podcast is for those who are healing trauma and finding ways to navigate through this messy, uncomfortable, and challenging recovery process. The intent of the podcast is to provide helpful information to validate, inspire you, support you on your healing recovery journey. You're going to hear stories from other survivors, trauma experts, and trauma therapists in the field that will provide information on effective trauma healing modalities, tools, techniques, skills, all in hopes of helping you heal. If you'd like to find out more information on trauma recovery healing, please go to my website at www.cptsdcoach.com. I also have an Instagram and Facebook page at cptsdcoach. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. So this is, I think, the second episode that I've put out this week. I usually put out one episode per week, but this episode, I didn't want to hang on until next week because my conversation with my guest was so inspirational that I really wanted to share it. So my guest is Jessa Dillo Crisp. And she is a survivor of severe childhood trauma and something that's not as well known, and that is trafficking within a family, so familial trafficking. And she uses her experience to illustrate both the stark realities of trafficking and the truth that healing transformation is possible. After her escape and recovery process, Jessa went to school and holds an MA in clinical mental health counseling as a step towards her dream of obtaining a PhD in clinical psychology. Jessa is the co-founder and executive director of Bridge Hope, an anti-trafficking nonprofit within the Denver metro area, and was recently appointed by the governor of Colorado onto the Colorado Human Trafficking Council. Jessa inspires others through speaking engagements around the world, gives hope through mentoring other survivors of human trafficking, and provides high-quality training and consultation services to both NGOs and government agencies. I hope you really enjoy this episode. Hi, Jessa. Welcome to the podcast.
It's an absolute delight to be able to be with you today.
It's an absolute honor and delight to have you here with me today because I have watched your videos on YouTube a long time ago, and I was so moved by your story. And the fact that I'm sitting here with you now and you're sharing your story with our audience, I'm so touched. I'm so grateful. I'm so thankful. And I'm really honored that you're here.
Thank you. It's been one of those things where when you reached out, and then I listened to your podcast, and it's just so amazing the work that you're doing to help individuals become aware of complex trauma and to grow beyond the traumas that they've experienced or individuals that they know have experienced. So, like I said, it's an honor to be able to have this conversation with you, and I'm excited. This is going to be fun.
I am so excited. I'm almost falling off my chair, but I'll brace myself.
I love it.
So we're going to be talking about something that I have never talked about before, and it's definitely a trauma, and that is the trauma of trafficking. And so if you're okay, we're going to talk a little bit about your own story. But before we get started, I wonder if you could just define for us, what do we mean when we say human trafficking?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, according to the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, which came out in 2000, the terminology human trafficking has been defined as the recruitment, the transportation, the transfer, the harboring, or receipt of persons for improper means, such as force, fraud, and coercion for an improper purpose, including forced labor, which also includes involuntary servitude, debt bondage, and slavery. And then we also have here sexual exploitation. So basically, to kind of break that down, because that's a lot of information within that definition, but to break that down, I really love the way that Polaris, which is also too known as the National Human Trafficking Hotline, and they broke it down into the AMP model, which basically the A stands for action, the M stands for means, and the P stands for purpose. And within this model, this definition can be looked at as action is the inducing or the recruitment of a human being, the harboring of a human being, the transportation, the provision, or even the obtaining of a human being through the means of force, fraud, or coercion for the purpose of commercial sex trafficking. And then we also have on the other side the labor and services, which is the labor trafficking. And so within this model, it also needs to be seen and stated that if somebody's under the age of 18 and they're having to do commercial sex acts, they're automatically a victim of human trafficking according to federal law and definition. And so, all of that to say, it is a big conversation, it is a big definition, and yet, to boil it down, I believe that exploitation happens through coercion and manipulation in many different ways within our community. And so, for us to just be aware of that and for us to begin to open our eyes to the reality of exploitation and trafficking, I think is essential.
Yeah, and I'm hoping we'll touch on that a little bit because I think that many of us just have this view that there's only one kind of trafficking and it looks like this. And so today you're going to introduce us to another way that's not that we don't hear about really much at all. I think you might have been the very first person, although I have to say, after hearing your story, I've heard many, unfortunately, many, many others. But and that is when human trafficking occurs within a family. So people are like, what? Would you be able to talk to us a little bit about your story and how that happened?
Totally. So my story is one of extreme traumas, as you mentioned, and yet it does not define me today, which is how I've been able to find the strength to begin to share. And so, without going into a lot of details for your audience, though, just to understand a little bit more about me and my experiences, I have survived familial trafficking. And so, for me, my story started when I was born in Toronto. I was born in one of the major hospitals in downtown Toronto. And I was born, though, to a family that was highly involved and things that were not right, things that were very painful. And my trauma started off as childhood sexual abuse, then turned into me being utilized within child sexual abuse material, which is the terminology that we now use to describe child pornography. And then that's when the trafficking started. And I ended up being sold to people within my neighborhood, close to the home I grew up in within the suburban community. And then it expanded to other places and locations, including being brought across the border for the purpose of being sold for sex. So, with that being said, just a lot of pain and trauma. I felt so hopeless. A lot. I remember standing at my window and looking out and seeing kids going to school and wishing that I could be like them and not understanding why my life was so different, but not just so different, why it seemed like they could smile and laugh with such authenticity. But for me, why all I could do was just cry and experience extreme sadness and hopelessness. And I was very suicidal as a young person. And so that very much laid a foundation for just who I was growing up to be, what I thought was normal. When you grow up in an environment of such extreme pain and trauma, you think that that's normal. And even though you might see dichotomies taking place, your brain hasn't yet fully developed to be able to understand those dichotomies. And so that's my story. That's how it started. When I was 21, I was actually at a hotel in Kansas City, and a woman there who saw the red flags of one who was being trafficked, she reached out to me and she gave me her contact information on a small piece of paper. And that contact information, I memorized it. I memorized her cell phone number, which I tell people, please don't give out your cell phone number to potential victims. It's not safe for you or them. This woman, the cell phone number she gave me was her work cell phone number, and she was a mental health professional who had started a safe house in Colorado Springs. So she was in the field of recovering individuals and helping them as they walk through their journey of healing and the process of healing. And so that was her job. So once again, please don't give out your contact information to a potential victim. It's not safe. But for my story, this was that turning point for my life and my story. And it was through her speaking truth into my life and her just really being authentic with me that I was able to put together an escape plan. And she helped me escape. And I experienced freedom for the first time when I got off the plane in Denver. And it was just amazing because, like, I experienced this big blue vast sky. And for your audience who have had the opportunity to go to Denver or live in Colorado, the sky here is just big. It's just big and beautiful. And so that was what greeted me when I got off the plane and we got in her car and ended up driving to Colorado Springs. And that was when I first saw tumbleweed, which I absolutely loved. And it was very special because as I saw that tumbleweed going down the road, it instilled inside of me a desire to someday experience that same kind of freedom, and that just having emotional freedom in that same way of just being able to be alive and to be able to just be free in the wind and just be free to embrace life around me. And so, we got to the safe house and I experienced new things for the very first time. And I will never forget my first root beer float and the party that just took place in my mouth and just other new firsts. I started to do puzzles, which was a very beautiful thing that I've carried on to today. It's just something that I enjoy today. I love puzzles. And so that was my life. And I was able to be there for over 6 months when my visa expired and I went back to Canada. And instead of going back to the Toronto area, I ended up going to Vancouver, BC, which is on the West Coast. And yeah, it was hard. I was in this big new city by myself and ended up being at a safe house during that time. And ended up just going through the motions of living. Once again, the depression was really deep and dark. And all of that to say, when the safe house shut down, I was given 12 hours to find a new place to live. And I ended up homeless as a homeless youth and just being in a very vulnerable place. And one of the things about human trafficking is that vulnerabilities, it could be many different types of vulnerabilities, whether it's relational vulnerabilities or just vulnerabilities of not having food or safe places to sleep that make one susceptible to individuals who take advantage of people. And so for me, my vulnerabilities were so present, and a woman actually saw those vulnerabilities in my life and she ended up recruiting me and grooming me. And so then I ended up through a string of events and through a string of deep traumas ended up being trafficked during the 2010 Winter Olympics. And so oftentimes people think of pimp control trafficking when they think of trafficking. And yet my story is the familial trafficking that happened and that took place. And then that put me in a vulnerable place for the pimp control trafficking. So not everybody's story is the same. And yet I do see that we need to talk about all types of human trafficking, all forms of human trafficking, as well as all the individuals that can become victims to this crime.
So Jessa, what happened after that when you got, I guess, trafficked a second time? How did you get out of that?
Yeah, so I was able to escape a second time and came back to Colorado, which was my place of safety, my place of just healing and a place of recovery. And when I got back there, I was once again just in a really dark place and did not want to unpack my suitcase because I was like, what's the point of doing so if there's no reason to live, basically, or if I have to go back to Canada, which was like, I'm gonna die before I do that. And but yeah, it was just really beautiful because the way that the safe house just engaged with me and loved me through that. It was just so powerful. And one of the things that the director at the safe house told me was, Jessa, if you can read, you can learn anything. And that was such a brand new concept for me because growing up, I was not allowed to go to school. And I felt so stupid. And I had been told so many times that all I was good for was to be a child prostitute. And that it's not the truth. And so because I knew how to read, I had taught myself how to read watching an older brother learn. And I ended up at the safe house starting to study, and we went to the library and got a bunch of books on like basic just things like geography and science. And I eventually got into school and I did my undergraduate in counseling. And then I graduated summa cum laude. 6 days after I graduated, I got married. I met my husband during my undergraduate program. And then I actually just graduated with my master's in clinical mental health counseling. And so for me, being able to hold that space that yes, we can experience trauma, we can experience hard challenges, and they do not need to define us. We can go ahead and gain resilience to overcome things and move into a place of wellness. And so that's something that I'm just really passionate about.
I hear it in your voice, and it's amazing. And you're going to be a mental health. Are you currently now a mental health therapist?
So I have my LPCC, which in Colorado is a licensed professional counseling candidate. So I am working as a clinician, which basically means that I have to get hours and supervision. But eventually I would actually like to get my doctorate. And I have this dream of getting my doctorate to be able to continue to work with people with where they're at in their journeys, but then also too, to be able to inform research and help a culture that I think is trying to figure out what it means to recover from trauma, what resilience means when you've experienced trauma. But I would like to go ahead and help this culture, help our society grow in those areas, because trauma is a human experience. And as I engage with people, the more people that I engage with, the more that I see that trauma is a theme throughout so many lives. And maybe if you haven't experienced trauma, I bet that you know somebody who has experienced trauma. And so with trauma being this common human experience, this common thread interwoven throughout people's lives, I see such a need for us as a society to become more trauma-informed. And one way that we can do that is through research. So that's one of my dreams and goals, but
You know, I mean, just listening to you from the beginning, everything you've been through, and then, you know, coming out of it and then getting married and having, you know, a husband, which I know you have a beautiful relationship together, then, you know, finding out that you can go to school, then getting your master's degree, and now you're, you know, just about a therapist, you are a therapist, and helping others. I mean, that's absolutely, your dreams have come true and they'll continue to come true. It is such an inspiration, and I'm just in awe of you. I was curious, because, you know, the things when we come out of trauma, we come out missing a lot of very basic skills, but a lot of basic human skills and things that we'd need, like how to use our voice, like how to say no, boundaries, et cetera. you know, how did you, I mean, how did you kind of find that you were able to learn these things? Mm-hmm. Big question.
Yeah, it's a big question. And yet, one of the things that my therapist told me early on is the slower you go, the faster you get there. And so I love climbing mountains, living in Colorado. That's been part of my recovery journey. So with that always in the back of my mind, I would find myself climbing a mountain. And for those of you who have never climbed mountains, I can tell you it's a slow process. It literally is taking one step after another. And I see my healing journey and my healing process is a very similar way of engagement. Trauma has impacted me on so many different levels. It's been hard for me to trust people. It's been hard for me to learn how to engage in conversation with people. It's been hard for me to learn how to even eat at a dinner table or how to go ahead and make a home a safe sanctuary. It's been hard for me to go ahead and learn what it looks like to be well within a relationship. So oftentimes when people come out of trauma, there can be codependency and other challenges within relationships. And so learning what a healthy relationship looks like has been something that I've had to learn. Impact of trauma has also impacted different coping skills. I used to have an eating disorder. I used to go ahead and do a lot of cutting and self-injury. I have found trauma has impacted the way that I just process challenges when I get overwhelmed, the way that I cope with those overwhelmed feelings. And yet, when I go back to that saying and that phrase, and when I go back to what climbing mountains mean to me, that the slower I go, the faster I get there, it takes away the expectation that I have to do this all at once. And the reality is, whether or not you're walking with somebody who's been through trauma, or you are on your own recovery process, the slower you go, the faster you can get there, because it's in those moments of going slow that you give yourself permission to learn. You give yourself permission to observe. You give yourself permission to make mistakes. And for me, that's what I've needed. And so it's not a cookie cutter answer. It's very personalized for each and every person. But for me, it's being in those relationships that are safe and making a mistake or not knowing what I'm doing and then growing through that conflict, or growing and knowing that we can have conflict and we can still be in relationship with each other. We can still have a healthy relationship. Conflict is actually good and it's beautiful when it's done well and nobody gets hurt. It's been in those moments of being in classes at school and learning the way that it should have been, the way life should have taken place, the way family should have been growing up, and then grieving those losses that I've had, and then looking at what I do have and just embracing the beautiful things in the moment and finding nurture in animals has been something very helpful for me. I love animals. I have a service dog. His name is Dr. Sigmund Freud. And so he's a blessing. But also too, like learning how to do self-nurturing and nurturing myself in ways that I never received growing up. And sometimes that's looked like even just getting a teddy bear and like allowing myself to hold that teddy bear and just be present in the moment. And so wherever you are on this journey, don't give up. It's so worth it to keep on going.
My gosh, I'm crying. I'm so moved and so touched, really. I just love that. And yeah, you know, I agree with you. As you were talking about the slower is faster, how true that is. What was coming to my mind is, you know, when we're in trauma, we're always in that hypervigilance, yes. You know, that state mm-hmm. of fight or flight, because we're looking for we're waiting for the next thing to happen. So we're always in a state of threat. And we know when we're in that place, our prefrontal cortex is not online. So we can't, if we're in that place while we're trying to heal, mm-hmm. we're not going to get the benefits of what can happen when we slow down. Then the things can kind of saturate, you know, and marinate. And that's what we want. Yeah.
And like oftentimes, like individuals respond to trauma through the fight, flight, freeze responses. And there's another one called fawning, which is basically always saying yes to people. And I think when we slow down, it can get really scary because we're not allowing our brain to continue, as you're saying, to be in that flight kind of mode. And so slowing down enables our parasympathetic or sympathetic nervous systems to slow down as well, which is why somatic work and being able to get reconnected to our bodies is so beneficial and needed. And we cannot rush that. It's not healthy to rush that. It's not healthy on a neuropsychological level. It's not healthy on a physical level. And so I can't tell people enough just how necessary it is for us to not rush the processes that we are in. And I think then that goes back to the idea of being mindful. And there's different ways to learn mindfulness. One of my favorite ways is when I'm washing dishes and allowing the water to really just for me to feel the warmth of the water, for my senses to smell the soap. And I always try to choose a dish soap that really gets me sighted and happy and makes me feel like I can connect to it. And then just seeing those bubbles and feeling those bubbles and still allowing all of my senses to engage in the process of washing dishes. And so whatever tasks you do, how can you make them more mindful?
Yeah. And each time we do that, that is, it's a neural exercise. And it's showing our brain and body that in this very moment, it's safe to be present. Yes. Remember that? And it records it. So yeah, that's
exactly.
It's so, so incredible because, you know, Jess, and I'm sure you know this, but for trauma survivors, it is very difficult to be in the present because we've always had to go away. It was too difficult to be in the present. So I love this, what you're talking about being mindful. Yeah. So there's something else I wanted to ask you, which might be helpful for the audience. And that is, you know, what would you say when it comes to being aware of potential people that may be trafficked? What would you say are the red flags that we could look for?
Yeah, that's a great question and something that gets me really excited to talk about, because when we talk about what it means to look for red flags of one who's being trafficked, we're also talking about prevention. What can we do to go ahead and help prevent trafficking from taking place in the people that we love and care about? So the list that I'm going to go ahead and give you is not exhaustive. This is very much the beginning. I like to tell people that you need about 3 to 5 different red flags to go ahead and put pieces together to have a greater understanding that something isn't right. And within that, I also encourage people, trust your gut. Your gut is something that can be trusted. So just a few red flags, multiple cell phones, also to do multiple phone numbers. So with our smartphones today, one of the things that a person can do is download apps, which give them the ability to have multiple cell phone numbers from basically whatever area code that they want. And so in the past, it used to be, oh, if somebody has like 2-3 cell phones, that would be a red flag. Yes, that is still a red flag and still happening. I go to speak to high school students on a regular basis and I ask them, how many of you have friends that have more than one cell phone? You'd be astounded how many students would raise their hands. And once again, you need 2, 3 to 5 of these red flags to go ahead and have a greater picture, but that's huge. Like, why does a child need 2 cell phones? And that puts inside of me a desire to know more about that. The same thing with cell phone numbers. Why would a person need multiple cell phone numbers if something's not trying to be hidden and something is not trying to be covered up? Also, too, another red flag would be like evidence of a controlling relationship, talking about the game or the life, which is terminology and verbiage for pimp control trafficking. Also, too, looking down when talking to you, no eye contact. Within the game, there's this unspoken rule. Most of the time it's unspoken, but this rule where if you make eye contact with another pimp, a churn up process takes place and you don't know what kind of pimp that you're now with. Now, once again, not all of these you're going to see. And you might also see the complete opposite, which is a very belligerent affect. Somebody who's been really hurt, who's very hard, somebody who's very street smart, and they might just completely go off on you and just be very belligerent and try to stare you down. Also too, has expensive things that were gifted. And I say gifted with quotation marks, simply because if a gift is given with something demanded in return, then it's not a gift. Also to a person, a child with an older person that they're not related to, that would be a red flag for me and cause me to start to ask questions. Clothing that's not appropriate for the time of year, sexually provocative pictures that are on a phone or on an online account, lack of ID for labor trafficking, a red flag would be somebody who's also living at the place where they work, and that is abnormal, or where somebody, where the person who is during the exploitation is the one who transports them, that would be a red flag to me for labor trafficking. We might see inconsistent stories, which is very common with trauma survivors. We might see personal hygiene items in a place of work. And like I said, this list is very broad, and this list is not completely fully, like these are, there's additional things that we don't have time to talk about today. Also too, red flags for different professions are going to also be different. For medical communities and medical providers, the red flags that you might see in an emergency room are going to be different than what a school teacher, an educator sees. And so I'd like to just go ahead and encourage people, if you see something that just seems off, something that has several red flags, go ahead and call the National Human Trafficking Hotline, make a report, and that can truly help individuals who are being harmed. Also too, if somebody is in immediate danger or harm's way, and you see that they're in immediate danger or harm's way, you need to call the police. And if you've experienced trauma from our law enforcement, that might be hard. And yet also too, I want to encourage you to do that, because there are a lot of amazing law enforcement and police officers out there, and not everybody is like the people that have hurt you. And so once again, I just want to encourage you, make that call, go ahead and call, and it could help somebody and change their life forever.
Thank you for that. Well, what is the one thing that you want to tell the audience?
I love it, this question, simply because I want to tell each of you that your past does not need to define your future. The past that your loved ones have gone through does not need to define their future. And yes, the journey of recovery is hard, it's slow, it's difficult, and yet it's possible to move into a place of wellness and to experience the beauty all around us. And so I would love to encourage you to keep your eyes open to beautiful things and to keep pushing on, because it's worth it.
Yes. And I just want to say, you know, if somebody who came from that amount of trauma and is telling you to push on and things can change, and she's talking from experience, that is so encouraging. Really. Oh, that's so beautiful. So before we close, is there anything else that you want to add?
I don't think so. I just want to say thank you so much for just inviting me to have a voice. And I think so often individuals who have been traumatized, their voices have been silenced. And one way that we can go ahead and create a safer place for other people to have voices is by inviting people to come to the table and to just share. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Tell us, Jessa, if people want to get in touch with you or find out more about your work, where can they reach you?
Yeah, so you can go ahead and reach me at jessacrisp.com. I also co-founded and I'm the CEO of a nonprofit that works with survivors of human trafficking. That website is bridgehopenow.org. You can also find us on social media, and I would love to go ahead and get to know you as well.
Thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
If you're thinking about trauma recovery coaching work with me, there are a few options. You can visit my website at www.cptsdcoach.com.